Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance as a force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing? And how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So, see you on Friday.
See you on Friday. Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone and to our viewers from Far East. Good night.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjee's. And it's already the ninth episode, meaning with Banerjee's, with Ben and myself, Svetlana. Good evening, good day, and good afternoon. Ben, before we start, please tell us, where are we going today?
Today we are going to my country of my first foreign trip. But I'll tell you about that. But can you first, for all the new viewers and people who just joined today for the first time, can you explain to them, what do we mean when we say impact investment and impactful business? And how does it differ from sustainable business? And why should somebody be interested in it at all?
Absolutely. As usual, I'm not tired to repeat what is impact investing. So when we talk about investments with impact, we are talking about investments which are done into innovative enterprises which generate, beside financial return, a big, huge social and environmental impact. It's innovative enterprises, they are scalable, and it's very important that they're financially self-sustainable. So we are not talking about charity, philanthropy here. It is an investment, but it is a good investment. So doing business and doing good is possible. And this is what we are trying to show you with practical examples, with various thought leaders, actors in the industry who are already engaged and trying to create positive impact on our planet. And difference to sustainability is very simple. Sustainable investments are investments which are usually selected by using environmental, social, and governance criteria called ESG. And those are best in practice companies. Let me give you an example. So some companies are reducing CO2 emissions, some companies are reducing waste, empowering women, putting them more in top positions, right? But at the core of the business, they still have profit. And this is one of the biggest differences to impact investing, which have underlying mission. So impact investments have an underlying mission there compared to sustainable investments, which are still focused on profit. And nowadays, many corporates call themselves sustainable, which is fine, and they are doing things, but I believe they can do more, right? So we are trying to shift the whole capital, which is available out in the world, towards impact investing, that even corporates which are sustainable could engage even more for better world, better future for future generations.
Exactly. And why should we be interested in it? I would go on for two reasons. One, you look at it from different angles. One is a non-economical angle. So if anybody who is reading news magazines or news today knows the consequences of the climate change, the global devastation of the biodiversity, and the genocide we are committing on all sort of life and species around the world. For those who are not aware, we have lost 40% of the, in the last 40 years, we have lost 68% of the world's wildlife. And in India, where I was born and I spent my childhood, 70% of the birds are gone. So we are seeing the cause, and these are all caused by loss of the natural habitation, pollution, and many other reasons. But for the economists under you, the loss being faced by the climate change on asset valuation is not only limited to fossil fuel-based companies or businesses or stranded assets, but also many other assets like agriculture, real estate. The damage is immense. And added to that is the risk and liabilities, which is also increasing day by day. These are the sectors exactly where impact investment is doing the opposite and is very active.
And for those who are watching us for the first time, Ben is always coming up with depressing statistics. So don't be surprised. But it's fact, right? So, and this is actually why we decided to start also a program, not only to raise awareness and educate people on what is impact investing, how to get engaged, but also to inspire with concrete actions from existing projects, from existing businesses, investors, and so on. And moreover, we want to get also into action unconverted ones by showing transformative journeys of completely non-sustainable companies which could take an action and incorporate in their business model the impact, and now they can actually generate positive impact even though they were not sustainable at all. And I'd like to share that a few weeks back, we started very successfully a new program for social entrepreneurs, and it's called Profitable Business with Impact. The next chapter of that will be on the 18th of March, where we all invite you. So make a picture so you get the link right now. And if you missed it somehow, you can always go to kamamal.ch to events and check this event, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And what is it about, right? So what you will learn in this course? You will learn how to create a successful and meaningful business at the same time, which is solving environmental and social issues while generating high return. You will also learn how to structure and scale your existing business to generate both, again, high returns and impact. You will learn also how to successfully fundraise in the impact investing sector. As I know, everyone whom I'm talking about, if you ask, when do you need guys money for your project, they say yesterday, right? So everyone is looking for money. So we will be there teaching you how to successfully fundraise. And moreover, to get support, expertise, and funds available in impact investing sector. So I invite you all to join us. It's a free webinar on the 18th of March. Ben, do you have anything to add?
No, except that we have extreme lot of experience with supporting with the business development and the fundraising, which Svetlana also mentioned. So now I'd like to go back to my story of my first foreign trip. So I was, I think, 9 or 10 years old, living in India, and then with some friends of mine, quite useless family members, basically, we took the bus from Dehradun and crossed the border, went into Kathmandu. It was a local bus, so you can imagine, bus full with chicken, living chicken, hens, whatever. That was, and when I came back, I could very proudly tell everybody I was a foreign returned. And in those times, that was supposed to be a very, very big thing. So that's my first international trip. So today I'm going to introduce people who will be speaking from Nepal, who will be joining us. Just for some little history background, it's an extremely special country, especially for the Indian subcontinent. Its history predates most of the known human civilizations, especially from the Indian subcontinent, which is already quite ancient. Next to that, it has the oldest discovered archaeological evidence of human settlement dating more than 30,000 years back. Until 2008, it was the last Hindu monarchy in the world. So it's a very, very rich country in biodiversity. And it has also very, to my knowledge, very positively and successfully protected and taken care of its nature and wildlife preservation. And I think the government has a very strong role to play in this. So with this, I bring in Nepal.
No, wait, wait, wait. Still, I need to say a few things before we bring the guest in. I also wanted to kind of reveal why I'm dressed today, not in a suit, but in such a colorful dress. So because, of course, we are going to Nepal, and I kind of miss the colorful everything of this country's India and Nepal. It's really amazing. And as we cannot travel physically at the moment, we travel online. And also what I want to mention today, that we go to Nepal as well, because this initiative was done by Galileo International Impact Investing Center, where I am the president. It's a nonprofit organization which raises awareness about impact investing and provides accessible education. And one of our volunteers is from Nepal. And with Galileo, we aim to make impact investing accessible and to unite ecosystem. And this is why we were thinking it would be interesting for Swiss, for all around the world, to learn what is actually happening in impact investing in Nepal. And so this is why we are here today in Nepal. And I think what we will learn today, the insights of private sector ecosystem and what is the need for investment in this amazing country. We will also learn what is the Swiss initiative in Nepal to foster private sector development and impact investing ecosystem in the country. And of course, with the impact investing fund which is coming, we will learn about impact investing opportunities and practical examples of the project. And now I'm really happy to invite all the three guests, Ben.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Exactly. I always forget how many companies Svetlana leads. So today we welcome our three guests. First is Her Excellency Mrs. Von Kappeler. She's the ambassador of Switzerland in Nepal. Then Mr. Tej Bhattarai from Embassy of Switzerland, and Mr. Tim Gocher, who is the CEO of Dolma.
Where are they?
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us on Friday evening.
Thank you.
So, Svetlana, you take it over or I start?
You can continue.
Okay. So, I would like to start with the ambassador first. Ambassador, I have a lot of friends who are ambassadors or prime ministers or presidents, but you are the first one I know who has also a background in NGOs. So, Madam Ambassador, how did you make this step from NGO to ambassador? Because you are working as an NGO very often. You must have been working with government authorities, representatives and officials, and now you are in the other side of the table. So I would like to know your personal experience on this matter.
Thank you very much. I was not 30 years old when I was sent by the Swiss Development Corporation to Africa. I was working, I'm an agriculture engineer from profession. And then I worked there in agriculture research, and I came back to Switzerland, and I was looking around to work in development corporation. I didn't want to work in research anymore. And then I thought it would be interesting also to get to know the other side. I worked with the government, in a government institution in Cameroon, and then I had the opportunity to live in NGO. And I think I would not regret it, because it allowed me to see now different side of development cooperation. And then afterwards, I decided to go back to the Swiss Development Corporation, where I then made my steps up to where I am.
Okay, thank you very much.
Amazing.
So, I continue, Svetlana, or you do?
Yeah, if you have, of course, you're always welcome to continue. If you have bright thoughts in mind, as you usually have, of course.
No, I would also like to know, how did you find Nepal? It is such an amazing country. Was it your own initiative, or it was by chance?
I was a conflict advisor in the Swiss Development Corporation, and then it was during created a Maoist insurgency, where we started to think on how we can continue the collaboration in this country. And we did, and because we always try to work around the conflict and not taking the conflict into account. So I was responsible for shaping this new way of working in the program in Nepal, working on the conflict. And that was 2004, I came first time. And since then, I am permanently in contact in Nepal. I was then from 2007 to 11, the head of the Swiss Development Corporation. And I went back to Switzerland and I was the head of the region. And then I had a short while, I was a vice director of STC. And then it was my dream to come back. I wanted to come back because this is where my heart lies, where my emotions are, and where I have seen also a tremendous change in the last year, which is so positive and which is very rewarding. And maybe we come later to that, but it's a very rewarding country, complex country, but extremely rewarding for us to be here.
Great. And this is why I wanted to ask Mr. Batrai, who is economist at the Embassy of Switzerland in Nepal. And of course, it's your country. So could you, Nepal and Switzerland are very alike, you know, the beautiful mountains, it's amazing nature. So what could you tell us about your beautiful country at first? And then we go more into private sector and all this stuff. But first, tell us something about your country.
Well, Svetlana, I could go on ages talking about Nepal, but please stop me, yeah? You're very right. Nepal and Switzerland are very, very alike in terms of natural beauty, in terms of the mountains, in terms of the glaciers. And that is also one of the reasons why both of these countries have large tourism sectors and why tourists are so attracted to these countries, you know? It's funny, it's curious, I would say, that these days, though, when we talk about Switzerland and Nepal together, it's not just the natural beauty that we talk about, but it's also people increasingly these days refer to how both of these countries are relatively small landlocked countries between large neighbors and therefore in between large markets, and also that these are both two countries which are really vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. I mean, picking off from where the ambassador left off, I mean, it's safe to say, I think, that this country has witnessed some transformational changes in the last two or three decades. I mean, from a country that went through a decade-long armed insurgency to one that now has a constitution which was drafted by an assembly which was voted for by the people. And the transformation hasn't only been on the political side. You see, on the economic side, the private sector has grown rapidly since the 1990s. The economy has expanded so much. If you look at socioeconomic metrics, you see that you know, people in Nepal today are healthier, they're wealthier, and they're more educated than ever before. There are more girls in school. There are more women in offices today than just a few years ago. This is quite a transformational change that we've had in such a short period of time. It's also a very young country. The population of the youth is quite large. And of course, this means that we have you know, a demographic window of opportunity for the next 30 years. I mean, the youth of this country is really globally oriented, but at the same time, quite locally rooted. So we have a very nice blend, I would say, of drive, of passion, and entrepreneurial spirit.
So you don't consider traveling or going to Switzerland, you are gone with your country, right? So you are staying there.
Well, I mean, I never say no to the opportunity to travel, but certainly it's a special country, yeah.
Svetlana, don't forget their mountains are higher.
Yes, I would love to climb to Everest one day. So then I would consult. Have you been to Everest, Tej?
Just have you ever climbed to Everest? The base camp is the best.
Even that is on quite high, I thought.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very high. All right, thanks for sharing that. And let's go to Tim now and ask, we'd like to ask you also a question as an introduction. So you have dedicated a lot of, or big part of your life to impact investing in Nepal. How did you get into this field and what appeals to you about Nepal? Why? Because you are based in UK now, right? So please tell us why Nepal.
Yeah, I have to confess, I'm not in Nepal at the moment. I'm just outside London, which is much less exotic. But I share Madam Ambassador's love. My heart is in Nepal. In fact, literally, I'm married to a Nepali lady and have been for many years. You know, what got me interested in Nepal was in sort of 2003 when I first went there. Then I literally fell in love with the country. We've talked about the natural beauty, but the beauty of the people, it's a very naturally peaceful culture. And, you know, you see smiles all around, they're very hospitable. No matter where you are, you're in a rich family's house, you're in a poor family's house. And I found that very infectious. I've always been in the private sector, in investment, either in renewable energy or different technology. And at the same time, there were lots of funds around the world, the first impact funds, the real groundbreakers like Avishkar in India. And you know, I really wanted to do something. I was in a job in investment banking, working in Singapore.
Yeah. Like and, most of us.
From ex-banker to ex-banker, hi. Yes.
So, you know, Singapore is fine. You know, my activities were not going to make a difference to Singapore's economy. When I started out through a non-profit called Dolma Foundation, and then in 2014, once I felt the peace process, which was mentioned, sort of completed in 2008, by 2014, it was clear that the country was going to remain stable or at least not slip back into conflict. And that's the point of where the private sector can really enter. So that was when we launched the first Dolma Impact Fund One, with mostly European development finance institutions as our investors, as well as family offices and high net worth individuals. And we've been investing ever since. We have done very well, both commercially and from an impact perspective. And I'm sure we'll talk about those in more detail. But it's not a small country. It's a 30 million population. Its demographics are amazing. And growth, pandemic aside, of course, was running at sort of 6 to 7.5% since the big earthquake of 2015. So from a private sector country, I think a lot of people focus on India and China, but miss, you know, the beautiful land that's sandwiched between.
Thank you very much. What is the sector you are in?
Three sectors we focus on. And again, I think these are the most exciting, both from a private sector return, but also from an impact perspective. The first is renewable energy. And that has a particular importance to climate change in Nepal. I mean, obviously, people haven't had enough power traditionally, so obviously you need clean energy. But the rate that the Himalayan glaciers are melting, for those that saw the terrible flood in Uttarakhand, right next to Nepal a couple of weeks ago, that is a very real risk as glaciers, these lakes build up. Renewable energy stops people, allows them to use electricity for light, heat in their homes, allows electric vehicles. And all of that soot that's building up on the glaciers and darkening the surface and warming the glaciers is a separate process to global warming. But it's a much faster process, and it's one that we can reverse through renewable energy. So that's a really important sector. Second is healthcare. Again, we've seen in the pandemic, especially outside of the Kathmandu Valley, the importance of healthcare. So we've invested in a hospital and a pharmaceutical factory, and we continue to invest in that sector. And third is technology, where digital companies, e-commerce companies, AI companies, are really benefiting from the fact there's no infrastructure disadvantage. So does it make any difference whether you're in California or Kathmandu? I would argue not, as long as the education is there. And that's perhaps the sector where we've had the most impact. That's where we employ through our companies around 3,500 people at the moment who are now plugged into the global digital economy.
Thank you very much. And renewable energy, which renewable energy are you? Because I'm also in the sector last 30 years. So I would be very interested, which renewable energy are you talking about? Are you talking about biodiesel or wind?
Sure. Wind, we haven't done. The reason for that is most of these are in, so the wind is in mountainous areas and the roads are so narrow. So you can't get the turbines up, literally, it won't fit on the road. But we've started with two run-of-river hydro plants. So there's two under construction, which we'll list on the public stock exchange this year. We've now done two of the first private sector solar plants. So we've got four, about 50 megawatts in total, currently under construction.
Okay. Well, then I'd like to go back to Ambassador von Koppeler. I'm a bit disappointed because we lost you, since I'm also on the board of East West Institute, which you must be knowing is a major crisis management institute, and also in the CMI, the Crisis Management Initiative from President Ahtisaari. So I think we lost you. You should have been there with us. So my question would be, I heard or I read that Switzerland and Nepal has very strong bilateral relationship. Can you tell us what are the initiatives that your embassy is doing in Nepal?
Nepal was probably the first country Switzerland engaged in development cooperation at the time, because it was so similar. So we started with cheese, with the things we knew how to do, agriculture in the mountain areas. And I think as Nepal evolved and transformed, we also changed, of course, our collaboration with Nepal. I would say one of the success stories we can take also credit is the reforestation. In the 70s, the hills were totally deforested. And the UK, DFID at the time, and the SCC have contributed to deforestation by introducing community forestry, so that the people were owned somehow the resources. So I would say that was really one of the success stories we can be proud of. The other was, we started very early with road construction, because we believe that without roads, there is no market development. So we were the first really who built the north-south road access to the China border, and then also east-west in the hills. We have been from the beginning in technical vocational training, that also Switzerland knows about it, the dual system. These were, I would say, always the field of competencies we have been in. Then after, Switzerland has also contributed to the peace process in Nepal by backstage mediation. And now we are here in Nepal and continue supporting the implementation of the constitution, the federal system, because we believe the federal system will be the condition for economic development, not only in Kathmandu, but also in other parts of the country. And we have seen how it worked well and how it will allow then provinces to develop their own regulatory frame for enabling private sector development. So we are supporting this implementation of the state building. On the other hand, we are still very much in the Tibet sector, in the dual education system. And also migration, we are somehow engaged very very early in safer migration, because this is a reality of Nepal and contributes a lot to economic development. So these are the main interventions we do. But what the beauty is from in our setting is we are the development branch, which is integrated in the embassy. We have a mandate of development cooperation, but also a mandate to to defend Swiss interests, and one is also to defend Swiss business interests. So we try really to link these two interests together in the sense that we can support Swiss businesses who are interested with the context know-how, with access to the government, with also liaisoning. And so these two parts come really nicely together. And I would say that is our added value we see here.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. And of course, it's definitely obvious that you are strengthening the private sector in Nepal. My question is still about impact investing. Like, you're talking about normal business, right? Entrepreneurship. But how is it, like, is there any, not to focus, but at least like starting talking about impact investing or sustainable investing in Nepal from the embassy? Is there understanding and awareness about that? Because Switzerland wants to become one of the leaders on the financial circle in sustainability. So how is it somehow coming over to Nepal?
So the mandate from the development cooperation side is to develop impact in investment. You know, this is we follow also the SDGs, and we have now in our new framework agreement, there is a request from the parliament that we invest 30% in climate change relevant fields. So we see that our investment or our effort in impact investment is exactly matching what the parliament has asked us and where we also see a future for Nepal. This is not only us as embassy, we also see the DFIs, the development finance institutions, such as the Swiss Investment Fund for Emerging Markets. These are not charity funds, these are funds which belong to the government but have an objective to give some benefit out of it. But they also have the mandate nowadays to invest in impact investment. And also the World Bank and other IFCs, they have a huge now pressure from their institution to invest. And we are now in Nepal, just discussing with all development partners together on how to support green economy, how to support green investment, and how to engage with the government on that to allow frameworks, policy frameworks, which just support this trend. So I think it's just the right moment we enter in discussion with you.
Ben, can I just have one more question?
I wouldn't dare.
Could you share a bit more of the statistics, maybe? How many projects did you support till now? And what are the criteria? Because I always think about the projects which are in Nepal, which want to get the money and support from Switzerland, from the embassy. So how? What are the selection criteria? How they can approach you to get some support?
So maybe I would say we just start with developing program for impact investment. We have so far supported studies and analysis on the ecosystem environment, you know, to map what are the entrepreneurs, incubator, accelerator, investors. And I think that was an important piece of puzzle, not only for us SDC, but for others as well. We have brought together all the DFIs to come for a common mission to Nepal, not to compete with each other, but really to somehow engage together in framing a policy environment which will allow impact investment. We also support the World Bank's effort to have one unit in the government who compiles all different ministries who are involved in investment framework, so that there is an easier environment. So we are now in that stage. I also would like to say that we are planning now a program where we will support enterprises which have now easier access to finance, but to to bring advisory service together with finance, because that what we see is lacking. Maybe Tim can say more on that. That's our new piste we will go. But we will look for really areas of investment which are climate change relevant. I don't like so much green economy, because we have to first really see what it means concretely. But that's where we aim where we want to go.
Thanks a lot.
Ambassador, if you're interested, I can send you, because I'm also with CLC, the Climate Leadership Coalition, and we are in the design of the, we did the designing of the Green Deal for European Union. So if you're interested, I can send you more information on the next step that is going to follow up after this, because the Green Deal has already been implemented. Now we are talking about the implementation of that.
Yes. So thank you so much. We are very happy. So we are just in an initiative together with the World Bank, with DFI, with the UK, with the EU, with the Swiss ADB on really how to shape it. And one area is where we invest is now really to look at what could be green jobs and what could be really impact investment in areas which are reducing climate effects.
So that's amazing to see that government is getting involved and acting, you know. This is really like, yay! Because 5 years back, it was not the case, you know. Switzerland was much more passive on that. But it's great to see that now everyone is getting into
exactly.
action.
I just wanted to ask now. I wanted to ask to... The native from Nepal, Tej.
The only
native. You have seen the whole change and the development of Nepal in the last many decades. So in the private sector, what do you see is the trends? How do you see is it moving? And what are the strengths of Nepal? Why would investor like from Europe or Switzerland look into Nepal? So where is Nepal's strength?
Well, if you look at the private sector in Nepal, its rise can really be traced back to the late 80s and early 1990s, when economic reforms really allowed the private sector to spread its wings and to move into different sectors. And since then, it hasn't really looked back, you know. But I think when we discuss about private sector in Nepal, it's very important to have a nuanced understanding. Because if you look at the statistics, really a large portion of the private enterprises are quite small. These are micro and small enterprises. Whereas the discourse on private sector in Nepal so far has been shaped by some of the larger players. Now, of course, this is changing thanks to social media, which allows for more diffused discussions on issues like this and brings this up, but also thanks to a new generation of very hardworking, driven, globally oriented Nepali youth, which are really making a mark for themselves in the private sector. You know, oftentimes when I think about the private sector of Nepal, the word that comes to mind is resilience, because it's a sector that has seen so much and gone through so much. I mean, it went through protracted periods of political instability, periods of economic uncertainty, but during all of this, not only has it survived, but it has actually thrived, you know. And I see a parallel in this with what Tim was mentioning earlier. With it's in our DNA as Nepalis, you know. We put a smile and we get on with it. So we're hardworking people. So that's one of the things that I think is very important to make. Now, if you want to identify the trends in the private sector, I think me being an economist, I always look at how the economy has structurally transformed over the years, you see. In the last 2 to 3 decades, the share of agriculture in the GDP has gone down considerably. And this is quite typical for any emerging market, right? That happens, that it's a sort of a natural movement. But in Nepal, what is curious is that it's gone from agriculture and jumped into the service sector growth. Of course, in between there were energy crises and so on, which hampered a bit the development of the manufacturing sector. But service sector has really taken off in the last 20 years. And this is also where really the bulk of private sector activity has come from. To give you maybe a concrete example, if you look at the finance sector, in the year 2000-2001, the total deposits in the entire banking industry of Nepal was around $2 billion. In 2020, the largest bank of Nepal alone has deposits of $2 billion. And if you look at the entire banking sector, the total deposits are close to $30 billion now. So you see, in a period of 20 years, it's grown so rapidly. So it's been a tremendous change, and there's really bigger now with the greater access to energy. On manufacturing sector, there's trends towards agricultural commercialization. But I mean, often as economists, we're two-handed, right? On the one hand, you have those positives, but there are also, of course, some challenges that, or risks, I would say, that you need to be cognizant of. One is that this country or its economy is quite driven by migrant workers sending back remittances, and that really fuels consumption. So production base is still a bit weak. Import consumption is quite large. So you have a bit of a risk there. But, I mean, Nepal is an avid consumer, which is, I mean, from an economic development point of view, good as long as we have the productivity side also addressed. And the other thing I think is, despite quite significant progress that has been made over the last few years, access to growth capital is still a pain point for enterprises here. So what investors can really bring in is, if you can ease that access for investors, for enterprises, for these young, driven, hardworking entrepreneurs who go about their day with a smile on their faces, I think the character of the Nepali people and the hardworking nature is really an asset that I think the investors would need to see and recognize. And really, I mean, there are always going to be opportunities. I mentioned this. Tim was mentioning how the growth has been over the last several years. We see that trend going to follow over the next couple of years. I mean, the next few years, especially because India is rising, China is rising. We're in the middle. There's no way we cannot rise together with them. So I think all in all, that's how we see the trend of private sector development in Nepal.
But I would, Svetlana always says I have all this negative information.
No, so just facts. It's the facts, because, but somehow they turn to be hard. Hard facts.
So you mentioned that your bank assets went from $3 billion to $30 billion or something in a very short period of time. Is it caused mainly by remittance, or is it caused by exploitation of the forestry or agriculture? Where did this sudden jump in the extra money come from? Because I always worry that sometimes you see in Africa or something, in many countries, these jumps are generally caused by investments in the wrong sectors. I mean, I call them wrong, like deforestation and things like in Brazil, what is going on? Is that the case with Nepal, what do you think is the reason why this investment went up so quickly, so fast?
Well, I think you picked up, I think one of the right answers, which is really remittances, volume of remittances that have come up inside Nepal in the last 20 years is coming. If you look at the volume of GDP that comes into Nepal every year, it equates to about a quarter of the entire GDP of this country. So you can think about the multiplier effects that it generates, right? Because it fuels consumption, it fuels investments. Of course, investments might not have happened into the productive sectors by households. Maybe it's mostly on consumption, but as I mentioned, consumption of imports. And of course, I mean, there's some level of investments might have gone into unsustainable sectors or may have been invested unsustainably, but we're confident that now with The governance structure in the country is set. You have local level governments, you have provincial governments, and you have federal government, which have mandate over, you know, constitutionally laid out mandate on all of these different areas. We believe that governance on these aspects are also going to be quite strong. And it's governance at the end of the day, which is the key, right, to sustainable management of natural resources, sustainable use of resources. And you have to remember, this country went for 10-year-long insurgency, and for a very long period of time, it was, you know, protracted political instability. So now, with this in place, we really see that Nepal has found its trajectory to move forward in the direction of sustainable development.
Okay. And I had one last question. A friend of ours, whom we also interviewed, is the president of Mauritius. And she made a huge impact on changing Mauritius into a very advanced, developed, especially with women empowerment, agriculture development, and things like that. And now you also have Her Excellency Devi Bhandari as your president. Has she also, being your first lady president, has she also made a huge impact in the direction, the social development and the economical development of Nepal, in your opinion?
Well, I'm not sure if the Mauritian context in here would fit quite well, because of course, you know, Honorable Vidya Vanagrika Devi Bhandari is the first female president of Nepal, and we're really proud to have the first female president. But the presidential office in Nepal is not an executive one. We have the prime minister, of course. Of course, you know, in terms of giving directions to the country, in terms of setting the dialogue, in terms of setting a role model, it's a very important office. But perhaps it's a bit different in the Mauritian context, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. I have one question from the audience.
What really changed?
Yeah, sure, Ambassador. Please go ahead.
I think what really changed is that in the constitution it is said that either the mayor or the deputy mayor has to be a woman, or the prime minister, or the president. So I think that has really contributed to a different perception of the value of the women.
Yeah.
I think it's about role model which drives this country. And for me, coming back after after a couple of years, I have seen the biggest change in the young generation and in the women. And these women are totally different than from 10 years ago. So I see a really push forward also in artificial intelligence. They are in bioengineering, they are in engineering, they are in many fields where we in Europe don't find any women.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Wow, yeah. This is perfect. Thank you very much. I didn't even know about this from Nepal.
In emerging market countries, usually women are really power women, you know, they can do everything. And we have a few questions related to this topic from the audience. So I'd like to jump in here with that. Dear Banerjee and guest speakers, coming up in the International Women's Day next week, also, my questions for you are about women in Nepal. So what are you doing to reach SDG 5 on gender equality and women's empowerment in Nepal? Whoever wants to take the question.
I mean, the country's constitution is quite progressive. I mean, even you have you have not only male and female, but others. I mean, this is the first country in Asia who acknowledged that there is others than male and female. So in terms of the constitution, it's quite progressive. So you see, a huge difference between the very rural areas, especially the Hindu rural areas, and the urban areas. You see a huge discrepancy. But you also see now in the rural area, women. So we have, of course, as a development organization, we support the government in the implementation of its gender and inclusive policies, but we also have our own policies where we even have targeting of women and discriminated people. It's not only the women, it's also the so-called low-cost, so-called marginalized ethnic groups. So it's more diverse than only when men and women. But of course, this is a need that Nepal changes its social fabric to more inclusive.
That's amazing.
Okay, I'd like to go to Tim now, as he is a in-the-field practitioner, and ask you, like, are you alone there with your fund? How many funds, impact investing funds, are out there? What are the impact investing opportunities? I mean, your fund, other opportunities, what are the opportunities out there?
The reason for asking is that because we are very well aware of the impact funds, especially in the Indian subcontinent. And India, of course, like you mentioned, is full of them. But we, till I heard of you, we didn't know about Impact Investment Fund in Nepal. So we'd love to know.
We stay focused on Nepal because it's really a big market of 30 million people. The answer to your question is there are a number of private equity investment funds. There are some also backed by development finance institutions like BO2. There are others which get investment from abroad, and there are local funds. I think what I want to say is the importance to grow. So we need more funds. And everybody here has said getting that startup and growth capital is essential. I think the entrepreneurial culture has grown enormously. And this is a result of both Nepalese returning from abroad, but also the culture of entrepreneurship is now global. You know, that fire to start a new business and do something with it. Yep. So I think in order to help promote more funds, we need the ecosystem to develop, which is doing very well, very much. So we need the government to be on board. And the Swiss embassy is leading on an initiative to coordinate all of the development finance institutions from around the world to help the government make it easier for foreign direct investment, to have new regulations for private equity venture capital type funds, which has already started. So I think for this to be a success, it has to be not just funds like ours, the organizations like the Swiss Embassy, who also work with the World Bank. We and all the other funds work very closely with the Swiss Embassy and the World Bank. And I think the most important part of that is the government. So it's been my experience, well, all governments are bureaucratic and have their legacy laws. The government is really willing where it can. What it needs to do is increase investment. It needs to create jobs. And we talked about the reliance of the economy on remittances from jobs abroad. I think the highest impact we can give to Nepal is to create quality, well-paid jobs in the country. Mm-hmm. And that will start to bring people in. It'll start to hopefully create a bit more of a export-import balance. Mm-hmm. So I think that ecosystem is really helpful. But just to that point of why would Tim Gosha, the CEO of an impact fund, why does he want more funds? Surely he wants less competition, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Actually, it's the opposite. The liquidity of our investments or any investments is the most important. So we're now raising a new fund. We hope to do our so-called first close in the next month. What a lot of people ask us is, Tim, that's great. You've made a lot of good investments. How are you going to exit? Now, we have managed to get a good track record on exit so far. But the more funds, especially the more specialized funds there are, the more likely you are to exit. So if a smaller fund invests in a startup, it grows, we might buy those shares. If we grow and there's a specialist renewable energy fund, hospital fund, we're going to be able to sell those shares. So the more funds there are, especially in specialized areas, the more liquidity there is, and the more likely you are to be able to exit an investment, the more funds will come in because they're comfortable and can get their money.
Yeah, that's very clear. You know, and UK is such an amazing example. You know, in UK, I always say ecosystem is much more developed and the government is supportive. And this is one of the reasons why it happens this way, right? So I don't know if UK would be willing to the government of UK would be willing to share their experience in impact investing with other countries. I was delighted once to be in the Parliament of UK to see how it's working. It's really cool. But Tim, as you are based there, and maybe you've been also involved with UK actors, like how could we bring best practices from UK to Nepal, or even collaborate with Switzerland, you know, because it's still lack of collaboration in the ecosystem of impact investing, which we need in order to really make it new normal.
Yeah. I just wanted to add to what Svetlana mentioned is that, for example, in Switzerland also you have Responsibility, Blue Orchard, there are a lot of major funds also very impactful. Are you also talking to them or trying to bring them in? And my another addition would be India, for example. You mentioned yourself, Avishkar. So I know a lot of funds like that who are now expanding so much that they are going from India to Africa, Far East and everywhere. Why are they also not moving towards Nepal? Do you know the reason for?
Okay.
You have a lot of questions, Tim. I hope you remember them all.
That's a lot of questions. I should have a pen here and make a note. Look, I think from the UK perspective, so DFID, now FCDO, we've worked with them very closely to set up our fund in the first place, to help figure out how to move money in and out of Nepal. That's not always easy. And they have been extremely active in helping us and others develop the ecosystem. In terms of attracting investors, first of all, I'd say the impact investment community, you mentioned Sustainability, Blue Orchard, Avishkar, a sort of shout out to Vineet Rai, the head of Avishkar. He's been a real mentor to me. And he really pioneered. He's really a pioneer, certainly in South Asia and now around the world. And I think we all help each other. You know, I now get a lot of people asking me, I would like to start an impact fund. How on earth did you do it? Just as Vineet and others. were very kind to me, because it isn't easy.
I know.
yes, I am in touch with the ecosystem in Switzerland of fund managers, but of course they're fund managers. They're unlikely to be a fund of funds. And for an investment management company like ourselves, we need to attract funds. Mm-hmm. And the primary type of investor, at least with the larger ticket sizes, is going to be the development finance institutions. And for our second fund, I can't talk about all of them, I think, but publicly disclosed has been IFC, which is the World Bank, private sector arm of the World Bank, which intends to invest in our second fund. FMO, the Dutch Development Bank, who intends to invest in our second fund. I can't mention any others because they've done the public disclosures. But as the ambassador said, there's also, not in our fund, but there is a Swiss, CFEM. There's also a development finance institution. So these are for profit. They're either banks or they are funds in themselves who are expert at hopefully making returns and taking and managing the risks inherent in developing a country. Mm-hmm. So it's really essential that that we attract and have attracted those kind of investors. But there's also really two other types of investors that are interested in investing in funds like Dolma and countries like Nepal. That is family offices who really and high net worth individuals. I put those in the same category, who really believe in the private sector as an engine for sustainable growth. Mm-hmm. And the third and emerging category are what I'd call the impact arms of private sector institutional investors, perhaps pension funds, asset management companies. And you'll see more of these come up with more expertise looking at developing markets. So, yes, we've had a lot of interaction from the UK, and it is very important that we and all fund managers look at all of those categories of investors to grow the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to take a few questions from the audience again. Two questions. The first one is about impact. which is so important, right? And the question is, what type of impact has impact investing created in Nepal besides quality job creation? Because, you know, a lot of times people think, okay, we just make an enterprise, create new jobs, and this is that. This is impact. But usually, in our understanding, impact investing is much deeper, right? It's not just about creation job. So what is the impact beside that one, which was created through impact investing in Nepal? And maybe Ambassador can take it, and whoever wants. Ted.
Well, yeah, maybe I can start along, and perhaps it would be best also to compliment here. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I see in terms of the impact investments that have been made by fund managers like Dolma, for example, in Nepal, is in these sectors which are really, you know, high growth, but also sustainable. You see impacts getting sort of multiplied through the course of its lifetime. For example, there might be an investment into artificial intelligence company, for example. You see, of course, that creates jobs and so on, but that also creates additional know-how within the economy. It helps to move towards a more knowledge-based economy. What it also does is that it creates demonstration effects. It shows that investing in these sectors are important and that they can generate not just returns, but also these social returns, right? So then you could have a graduate from a training, for example, in AI, go on to start another business, which might be on the sustainable side. Same goes with renewable energy as well, you know? You might have renewable energy, solar plants, which help to bring water up higher up into plantation areas, which helps improve agriculture in formerly barren lands, which then generates more income for the families there, which then helps them to afford education for their children. So you really, I think, have to think in terms of the multiplier effect that it also has. And the sectors that most of the funds here have invested into, you do see that happening. That's what I've seen in the past.
Okay. I wanted to also take a question from regarding this point. So one thing is that I was speaking also with the Bangladesh a couple of weeks back. Bangladesh also has a very remittance-based economy. So a lot of their GDP comes from remittance. But their also education system is based on that. So they educate people not as per as the country requires, but as per as they think is required by the countries where these people will go to work. And the question from the audience is that your education system, how is that? So Sandeep writes from Nepal, one major need in Nepal is education related to sustainability. Are there any initiatives to build in-house resource in Nepal as well as fund researchers in this field?
Shall I start with a part?
Yes, please.
I would say, Nepal is different from Bangladesh. Bangladesh also always wanted to send its people out. Nepal never wanted to send the people out. So okay. So you could not talk about a migration. We were accused that we pushed people out. That's a totally different perception. Having said that, I think what the problem is in the education system here is that the schools produce, workforces which have not the skill the market needs. You know, that is the biggest, I would say, problem. And that's why, honestly speaking, we are so much in the dual apprenticeship model in Nepal, where the students are 4 to 5 days in the companies and 1 day in school, in order that there is laborers or staff or employees, which then the private sector can use. So I think that's where we are. Mm-hmm. Where we are also in is a bit on in preparation of migrants to get the certificate in order that they earn more. So we are also really in certification in the TVET sector, in order that the migrants, when they go to the Gulf, they have a certificate, they get more money. But on the same time, also that the workforce here in Nepal is better can be better used by the private sector. Yeah.
Okay.
I stop.
And I think in that case, Switzerland can be an extremely good point, because if I look at India, for example, India is producing, I don't know how many tens of millions of engineers and doctors every year. But what India needs also, maybe even more importantly, is farmers or people who can do handwork and things like that. And I think in Switzerland, in that way, Switzerland is very strong, because Switzerland teaches practical training is a very basic part of education system here. So are you also collaborating with the, or are you supporting or advising the Nepalese education system in this way?
Yeah, we are advising the Minister of Education with the professor from the ETH Zurich, Ursula Reinhold. She is the specialist in Tibet in dual education. She advises the minister here directly. And together with her, the ministry has now developed a Tibet policy, which defines really that this is a dual education system, is part of a formal system with no dead end. So it is attractive for young people to join, because as you said, in India, everybody wants to be a doctor, and at the end, they are not useful to the market. We have also really observed that the private sector is extremely interested in Nepal. And I would say, we always say, Nepal is more advanced than the US in its understanding and in its approach on the introduction of the dual vet system. And we are very, 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 very proud and very, very confident.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's good, because I also know ETH, because I give lectures there at the ETH, and they are very strong in this.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Svetlana, go ahead.
And she is the advisor of the minister itself. Mm-hmm. So we really could bring the Swiss know-how directly to the government, Iceland.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's great to see. I have a question, actually. Do you guys engage somehow, like team and ambassador, or like is there any type of collaboration going on of you, or you see each other for the first time?
We see each other. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe afterwards you can talk. Then another question, Tim. Could you give us maybe two highlights of the project where you invested in, so that projects which are in Nepal and looking for funds could kind of think, okay, what are your selection criteria? If they could maybe be in your next fund which you are setting up. So could you please give us two practical examples?
Sure. If I may answer a previous question, and then I will happily respond to that. There was a question, and Tej answered about the impact that some investments are having. And so we track our impact by SDG, and every year we develop an impact report. And the obvious impacts are, obviously, you build a renewable energy plant, you save some CO2 and greenhouse gases, you create jobs, you pay a number of an amount of tax into the economy. These are the, if you like, primary impacts. But what I find, and this is related to the gender question from earlier, what I find fascinating is when you dig deeper. So I'm going to give you a statistic. Mm-hmm. The average 75% of Nepal's primary energy is from burning wood. I already talked about the damage that's doing to the glaciers. Mm-hmm. Did you know that 375 hours per year is the amount of time collecting firewood per household?
Mm-hmm. Guess
which gender collects the most firewood?
Women.
So if you want to, and this is all connected to the gender question and the education question, okay, the ambassador mentioned the urban-rural divide, and it really is that, not just for gender but for discrimination. So imagine a world in Nepal where renewable energy provides all of the heating and light source to all homes and businesses. There's no need for firewood collection. Those girls or women can now go to school, can now start businesses and have the electricity to allow them to do that if the electricity is needed. So when you start to scratch beneath the surface of the so-called primary impact numbers, it's really amazing when you look at the impact of what we're doing. Your question was about what project, what examples do we have? Now, unfortunately, we don't really, it's not impossible, but we're a fund. So we're raising money for a fund rather than specific projects. And our second fund, Dolmer Impact Fund 2, should have its first close. The total we're raising is $75 million. There will still be some room after the first close. And that should happen hopefully within the next month. That's with development finance institutions. Now, what we're doing, as well as hoping for other development finance institutions, is to get into those other two categories, high net worth individuals and family offices, and the impact arms of institutional investors.
But are those based in Nepal, or it's also European, UK investors? So who are your investors?
We are specifically an international fund. So we're the first international private equity impact fund for Nepal, exclusively for Nepal. Mm-hmm. So if you are looking for, and there are domestic funds, of course, which we invest alongside with in companies. So we are particularly looking for international, Swiss, European, American, or multilateral investors. What are the kind of projects that you could see if you were an investor in our fund? You would see high impact, high return, high financial return.
How high? Just for bankers from Switzerland to reveal, you know, there is no trade-off between impact and return. So just give them the number. How high was your return in the first fund?
confidential information. What I can say is we are
double digit.
Yeah, we are consistently above 20%.
Okay.
Even during the COVID period.
Even during the COVID period, and I'll explain why. So we did come down to closer to 20%. Not all of this is realized, but some of it is realized. And actually, the exit we've had was significantly higher than that. So our target is to get a 20% gross return. So even if it falls down a bit, we hope to achieve that. In COVID, because we have a mix of healthcare, technology, and renewable energy, actually the one to be affected most was renewable energy because of lockdowns and the construction had to stop. Of course, our hospital actually shut down for a while, but then started to do very well, unfortunately, because it was COVID patients. Our pharmaceutical factory was more in demand than ever. And, you know, our technology work, yes, it took a bit of a revenue hit. So when you've got a portfolio, you know, there were some ups and downs. But actually, in many ways, one of our companies, Sasta Deal, is the second largest e-commerce company. So, I mean, they've done extremely well. So, you know, those are the kind of projects. But the ones which really fascinate me, and, you know, anybody that wanted to invest in Dolmer or Nepal could expect, would be, you know, technology. We've got two artificial intelligence companies servicing some of the most exciting international projects in the world. They're export companies, which is great for the balance of trade. They provide thousands of jobs, and there's an incredible proportion of female software developers who are homegrown. What we do have to do on the education side is we have to do a lot of training when they come out of Nepali universities. They're not ready to be AI software developers immediately. There's a year's worth of training. But, you know, there's an incredible impact there, and they're really plugged in. Whatever they do in the future, they're really plugged in. And I think the healthcare, what we're doing in our second fund now, is really moving out into the provinces. So trying to get clinics, especially for diabetes, and lots of other services, using digital services on top of a physical infrastructure. So what Nepal has the opportunity to do is really leapfrog where it hasn't had a health infrastructure much outside of the Kathmandu Valley, is really using a combination of asset light and technology rich healthcare services, diagnosis, preventative health measures, and really doing that. So that's the kind of thing that an investor in Dolmer could expect to see.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. That sounds amazing. Yeah. So when are you closing the fund?
Oh, you'll have to ask our investors that. I think the latest estimate was the end of March. These things we're deep in the legal documents. We have all the approvals. We're deep in the legal documents.
But are you targeting only the DFIs or funds who are or people who are only active in the impact sector, or are you targeting, for example, Switzerland has an extremely big financial sector. You have, I think, 3,500 or 3,600 plus asset managers, family offices. Are you also targeting them?
So our first close is all development finance institutions. Mm-hmm. They have quite big ticket sizes, and it gives, yeah, it gives us a critical mass. As we move on to the second close, we're looking for a more diverse range of investors. I think what, including all of those, the only thing we're not allowed to do is obviously retail investors. So it has to be a mm-hmm. professional investor. Yeah. But what I think is really important for Nepal is to is for us to be a demonstration fund to increase future foreign direct investment. So Nepal has the lowest amount of foreign direct investment by a long way of any country in South Asia. And what we want to do is be an agent of change. So development finance institutions are perfect for this market, but all of them put together wouldn't plug the gap that Nepal needs in foreign investment to meet the SDGs. So what Nepal needs is institutional family office private sector investment. So we are going to now be casting the net a little wider in the second close. To try to include some of those, even if there's just one or two, having a big name institution in our fund investing in Nepal would allow them to feed back to their community. Hopefully we give them a positive return and positive impact.
But do you know what, I just wanted to know, what was the reason why you think Nepal has so less foreign investment compared to its other neighboring countries?
I think two reasons. One is, people overlook it. It's small, although it's 30 million people, it's still much smaller than Bangladesh, Pakistan, and obviously India, not Sri Lanka. The other is it's difficult. And this is an area where, you know, we, and especially led by the Swiss Embassy and the DFI consortium, really pushing. It just takes a long time to get a license to bring money into the country, for example. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are put off. I think Nepal is realizing that it's competing for international money. Because if you think, if you look at our the returns that I mentioned, you know, economics would state that a country with a young demographic where you could invest a dollar, how much return would you expect on that dollar? There's less competition. There's a lot of consumer buying. You'd expect a high growth. So economics would normally bring capital towards a faster growth, younger country, if you like, than like Nepal. But if the bureaucracy is so difficult that people give up, then you're going to have. So I do think the government is working on that alongside its international partners like the Swiss. And of course, what we're doing is giving a track record. So what investors want to do before Dolma, BO2 and other funds, there really wasn't many examples of people that have invested and exited. And what was the return? Mm-hmm. So then you're asking investors to look into a crystal ball. And then
exactly.
So
maybe now I jump in because it's really a burning question. I'm sorry. Because you said you are ambassador of change. So we are as well, right? And for me, it's very important that not only DFIs and ultra high net worth individuals, wealthy people get opportunity to do impact investing. And it's everyone knows that at the moment, it's still not accessible to retail, right? So what must change? And in my view, it's educational sector, it's government, it's the financial regulation needs to get involved in order to make it possible to invest also for small investors, right? So my dream is that if I go to a Swiss bank, that anyone who has 100 francs or 1,000 francs, at least 1,000 francs, they go to UBS or Credit Suisse or any bank and say, hey, I want to engage for SDG 5 or 1. What can I invest in which fund and create impact, right? This is not possible yet. So how do we make it possible? And I'd like maybe to ask each one of you, so we have all the opinions on that, because this is really important, you know, together, we can move enormous amount of capital. You know, retail investors, they have a lot of money as well if you collect them together.
Yeah, but Tim must be thinking, if I start going after people with 100 francs, my due diligence and administration will be a disaster.
It's not Tim's job. It's a financial sector job to provide a solution that it would be possible to invest for small investors. We have blockchain technologies. We have all of the technologies available. I'm sure there is a way. There must be just action and willingness to really implement that.
And I think you're forgetting the bull in the China shop, the government regulations. I think that can also support and help a lot.
Maybe I can start with that. I think the government of Nepal has fully understand the importance of this foreign investment. And we, as also Tim said, we really fight hard to get the minimum threshold, which has been increased to 500,000 dollars to get it down, because we believe it's not only the big investment which really changed this country has really a niche market potential and the potential for small and medium enterprises to deserve investment. So I think the government has not fully understood yet. They want the billions, you know, for hydropower and don't see the relevance. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, this foreign investment also brings competition for the own business sector. And of course, they're a bit reluctant what happens when they open it totally for foreign investment. And we see that as a problem, and that's why we really engage so much on the policy level in developing startup policy, in supporting also or pushing that the minimum threshold is decreased and to enable an environment which allows it. That's what I can say from our side.
Is Nepal member of BITS agreement? Do you know if Nepal is member of BITS? No, BITS, Bilateral Investment Treaty. It's an agreement that countries have, for example, Netherlands has with many countries, US, Netherlands, Switzerland has with many countries. Is Nepal all signatory?
I don't know about it. Tim, you know more. I don't know.
Yes, Nepal has a number of bilateral trade and investment treaties. It has 10 dual taxation agreements where they agree to share tax. People don't pay double tax. So yes, it's quite plugged in.
Okay, because that's very important for international investors. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd like to hear from Tim also my question about retail investors. How do you see that? Because you've been... I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a burning question. It's very important. I always torture our guests with such questions. So I'm sorry for that, but we need to talk about the elephant in the room.
So for all the financial regulators watching, we are not raising money from retail investors before I'm struck off.
I know that, but how? I know that you're not
raising. If you ask me how to get that money in, I think question is in two levels: how to do that internationally and how to do that locally in Nepal, because there's quite a lot of liquidity in Nepal. Internationally, I think the fund management industry for its ESG and impact investments, there are of course mutual funds and funds that people can invest in managed by fund managers. They're largely public stocks in Western markets. Okay, in order to get down to the real impact, the poorest countries, you need investment managers which are prepared to really look into much poorer countries, much riskier countries. Now, what I think is a really interesting proposition for them, we ran a correlation of the Nepal Stock Exchange against the S&P 500 and the FTSE 100. The correlation was zero, right? think what happened, not minus one, it's not negatively correlated, but it's completely uncorrelated. Now imagine how the international fund management industry looks and what happened in the financial crisis, what happened to the stock exchange crash with the pandemic initially, is that all these markets that we think are going to have diversification actually, they all move together in an international crisis. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you had in your portfolio some really poor, relatively disconnected countries that actually might do well, might do badly. They're certainly more risky for sure, but they're uncorrelated. I think that, so you've got a sort of mathematical financial proposition for going into countries like Nepal, where you have an increased impact on gender, on climate, etc. But also you're buying that uncorrelation. So I think that's an opportunity which has been missed in the international fund management industry. In Nepal, the stock exchange is fairly well managed, but it's very cautious. So for example, if you have a hydro plant, it's very good. It's very good. If you've got a high growth tech company with a very low book value, asset value, it's not going to value that growth. It's looking for traditional assets it can fall back on. And I think that's just a journey that the local stock exchange, but I think in parallel to what the international markets are doing, the local stock exchange is trying to get used to how to bring tech companies, how to bring those startups to give the liquidity in Nepal and those companies an exit through the capital markets.
Thanks, Tim. The time is running out here, and we usually end up talking longer than we schedule it. So I hope you are okay if we stay a couple of minutes longer. There is a very interesting question from the peak of Nepal, so Everest, right? I'd like to take that one. Just a second. Hi, everyone. Such an interesting conversation in Nepal. How are we supporting Nepal climate change, Everest? So is there anything done in Nepal regarding that?
Well, in Nepal, of course, you know, as we said, climate change, it's a country that is really vulnerable to the impact of climate change. And the government, and Nepal itself, however, is really a very small emitter of greenhouse gases and so on, but the impacts are quite large. And this has been recognized by the government, by the people as well. And there have been a string of regulations and policies that have been enacted by the government, you know, also in the nationally determined contributions. In accordance with the COP24 agreement, for example. So I think more than anything else, we see also at a really micro level, you know, if you're a farmer in Nepal who's farming and who's dependent on monsoon rains, and the monsoon rains don't come at the time when they need to, you have to risk not just, you know, one cropping cycle, but you risk falling back into extreme poverty. So it's, of course, something that is... something that we see manifesting in a real-time basis in Nepal, and which is perhaps also the reason why there is a movement on this front, at least from the government side. And this is also true for the development partners. As the ambassador was mentioning earlier, the development partners are coming together to support Nepal in having a green recovery from, especially after COVID-19 as well, because every crisis is an opportunity to build back better, right? And this is also the idea. So the development partners are coming together to help the government also think about the best ways to make economic recovery climate smart, climate resilient.
But maybe we have to convince the government even more, and this is what we have to discuss. I mean, what is an incentive for the government to even accelerate its climate change friendly policy. So that is one thing we really try to find out how we can create incentive for them. And one is the government of Nepal wants infrastructure. Still, they are very much focused, but how can we link it, you know, have infrastructure, which then also take climate change is relevant issue to account. So that is one way we go forward. But there is, of course, and I have to say, the World Bank is the biggest push factor, you know, to push the government to change its practices, because they have huge money behind, and I think this is a lucky for Nepal and lucky for us that the Lopak has so much now also focus or has to focus or will focus on on green investment and inclusive development. That's their
Thanks a Thank lot. You. It was such an amazing discussion today, very insightful. Yeah. And we have so many questions out there, impossible to answer that all. So I wanted to propose a solution, you know, and we have chamomile.ch, which is our platform to unite the ecosystem of impact investing. And it's for different tasks, you know, but basically it's to achieve sustainable development goals that people can learn, engage, invest, and connect, of course. So how about that? You can become a member of Chamomile. We can post on our forum Impact Investing in Nepal, and the discussion can be continued. So this is the whole idea, that we encourage people to have dialogues and then to come into action.
Thank you very, very much, everybody. Thank you, Ambassador. Thank you for coming.
And yes, it was our pleasure to have you with us today.
Yeah, it must be extremely late in India. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you very much. Bye. Namaste. Namaste. Namaste, everyone. Namaste.
Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance and force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing? And how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So see you on Friday.
See you on Friday. Hi, sorry for coming back. We just forgot to mention the next week's guest, in case most of you must have seen him already. Since we had so many questions, we couldn't complete. So we have to ask him to come back. That is Martin Palmer, the president and the interim chief executive of the Faith Invest. He will be here on Friday, right, exactly at the same time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to get a nice preach again. It was really inspiring last time, so I hope to hear more of that. So thanks a lot for your attention, and act with impact. See you next Friday.
Bye-bye.
Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance and force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing? And how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So see you on Friday.
See you on Friday.